for 9 years in a row, ranking Arizona's number one most trusted referral network, RosieOnTheHouse.com.
Information that you can't get anywhere else.
And 30 years of Rosie on the House.
Welcome to hour number four here at Rosie on the House. This is our fourth and final hour of our weekly Saturday morning broadcast. This hour is designated specifically to one area item of the home. This month in December, we're focusing on the different tools as it relates to not only gift giving, but our 30th anniversary toolkit that we put together. We'll get into that a little bit later. But real quick, if you missed the rest of the broadcast or you're just joining us, it's the first Saturday of the month, which means it is the kickoff to Christmas in Arizona at Arizona's official Christmas city, Prescott, Arizona. The parade starts at 1 o'clock. There's almost nowhere in Arizona that's 3 hours away from Prescott. If you were with us during our 7 o'clock hour, you heard about all the different miles and miles of trails around Arizona, and particularly around Prescott, Arizona, that you could go and enjoy and stretch your legs and enjoy some beautiful mountain fresh air before the courthouse lighting that starts at 6 o'clock. They get together on the north side of the court. Do the Christmas reading, sing some carols, do a countdown, and of the 180 trees, at least 130 of them all light up there in Courthouse Square. It's a lot of fun and really helps you get kicked off to Christmas in Arizona. It can be hard to put yourself in that Christmas mood in a very brown desert Southwest, but this is a great place to get it all kicked off and just a fun family tradition we started here at Rosie on the House. It's 8 or 9 years now, and we've actually been involved in the parade. My sisters were cloggers in the 4-H clogger, clogged in this parade for at least the last 20 years. So it's been a part of the Romero tradition for a lot of years and a great family atmosphere. But back to our topic of this Saturday's broadcast. It follows our home maintenance calendar. We just had a big meeting with the team this week and finalized all the details for 2019. So that's going to print. Takes about a week, and then it'll start hitting inboxes here in 2 weeks. All you have to do is send us the address you would like the calendar to be delivered, and we'll get it shipped to you for free. It really helps create enhanced content for us here at Rosie on the House because it outlines the entire year of what we will be talking about. In the 10 o'clock hour, again, it's always focused on something specific to the home. December's tool month. When we go forward into January, we're talking appliances. February's plumbing, so on and so forth, and we cover each one of those topics in depth. We also have our weekly to-dos. We cover that in the 9 o'clock hour. So you get to see what you'll be learning at Rosie on the House, and it helps our team stay focused and working far enough ahead that we can add all kinds of enhanced rich media, images, video, in addition to the audio and text we've been doing regularly for the last 30 years. So you would just email us, calendar, to info@rosieonthehouse.com. We'll get you added to the mailing list. And you don't have to sign up again. If you signed up for last year, you'll get one again this year until you ask us to stop receiving it, and then we'll take your address off the mailing list. Okay, to this week's topic. This toolkit we've put together are the 7 essential tools every homeowner should have. And we're going to start with the hammer because as far as any type of archaeological research can show, it is the first form and oldest form of tool invented by man. Of course, its early existence was just picking up a rock and smashing whatever it is you were smashing, whether it was an animal or whatever the case, trying to crack open a coconut or pecan. As time moved on, people started figuring out how to take strips of animal hide and use it to tie these stones that they've then crafted into shapes onto these sticks. And you've all seen that iconic picture of the old stone man sitting there chiseling away, making his wheel for the first time. And it stayed like that until really the forging technology became into an existence and we started matching machined metal with hand-carved wood. And it stayed like that basically up until the Industrial Revolution, when all kinds of changes and ergonomic designs started hitting the market. The oldest archaeological site that they have found evidence of hammers being used is near Lake Turkana in Kenya, Africa. And in doing the research for this, the most interesting thing we found, did you know there's actually a hammer museum? And we were so excited when we found this, and we thought, man, what a great interview this Paul Davis, the founder of the Hammer Museum, would make. He's been a collector of hammers for over 50 years and has a perception and a goal of self-sufficiency and homesteading. The problem came into play location. They're located in Haines, Alaska. He's closed. The museum's closed until May. Now, we've sent him emails and we've left phone messages, but none have been returned yet. So I don't know if they just completely check out until May. But I will tell you, if I learn nothing else from that, I need to relocate my business to Alaska. If you can shut down for 6 or 7 months and still make a living, that may overcome the cold. I don't know, but going through his website, there was three unique hammers I have never seen before. They were all within the last 100 years that, as far as I can tell, they don't even make anymore. One's called a fence wire assembly and stretching tool. And this was designed in the 50s when barbed wire was being used extensively for cattle ranching. And it did all of those things. It would help you put the little staple pin over the wire and hammer that staple pin into your wood post to hold your barbed wire. It would help stretch the wire as you were trying to tighten it. And it, the image that they have, a tool by James Birch, patented in 1945. A very unique, the top of the hammer looks pretty traditional. It's when you get to a couple notches that are cut below the head of the hammer, and instead of a handle, it's a ring. And the way the reason for the ring is so that cowboys could slide it over their saddle horns to carry it as they're mending fence along the way. Another one that was really cool was this multi-tool, what they call stovetop lifter. It's a combination tool developed back in 1866. It was a multi-purpose kitchen tool designed for lifting Dutch ovens, moving your hot cooking plates, and also hammering the lids back into place if you didn't have, if you didn't set it properly or didn't have the proper, you know, like oven mitts to pick the, to set the lid back on top of your Dutch oven or whatever cooking pot you had. Then there was the saw setting and swagging hammer. And this one's really unique because it's a hammer designed to help you straighten and work your saw. From the wood handle, this little metal shaft extends, and there's a circular head on the top. The left side, it's notched. And what this would let you do is you could slide that over your saw, and if it was bent, it could help you tweak it left and right and try and straighten your saw back out. And then on the other side, there's another shaft with a blunt head, and this was used for swag, which is a technique used for squashing the teeth of your saw blade if you're trying to broaden the width of your cut. I'm not exactly sure why that would have been needed back in that time and era, but that's a time and era. I didn't have circular saws. I didn't have modern machines that, you know, did all of this for me. So those were some neat things that we found, along with this entire photo collection they have designated to the industry of wood handle building, starting off with where the shagbark hickory trees are grown, how they're milled, how they're cut into, the 48-inch lengths, what they were sized down to before they started hand-crafting these handles. Again, turning came in later as technology developed. And it's an extremely fascinating website, and we look forward to having him on at another time. Some additional things that we found while doing our research for this was tools you're likely to find complemented with the hammer: anvil, chisel, pipe draft, start drill, you have the punch and the tap. The physics of hammering was extremely interesting to me. It's probably a lot more technical than most of the our listening audience finds interesting, but I'm a detail guy, and it was broken down into four different simple areas. You've got the force amplifier, which is converting the mechanical work of the active hammering into kinetic energy, and the head of the hammer, that's equal to the length of swing times the force produced by the muscle and gravity. Then you've got the head mass, and this is the energy delivered to the nail or whatever you're trying to strike. And each blow is equivalent to half the mass of the head times this head speed at the time of impact. And then you have the handle. Basically, what this breaks down to is the longer the handle, the more force can be delivered. But the harder it is to strike, to hit your targeted strike zone. Then you've got the gravity, and that one's pretty self-explanatory. If you're hammering in a downward motion, it's going to have more gravity behind it. If you're trying to hammer overhead, you're working against gravity, so it reduces your strike impact. When we get back, we're going to talk about the proper swing of a hammer. Have you ever sat down and pondered how to properly swing and minimize your strikes? If you've ever watched the movie Karate Kid 2, the way Mr. Miyagi does it, I'm not going to critique Mr. Miyagi's karate techniques or the crane technique or any of the other specialty drum techniques, but his hammering technique leaves a lot to be desired. Here at Rosie on the House with you every Saturday morning. This week we're talking hammers. Then we also have the channel lock plier set we'll be talking about this year along with this month, along with the Stanley tools that are in our toolkit and the toolbox that holds it all together for our 30th anniversary, for our Thank You for 30 broadcast anniversary. And when we're not here on Saturday mornings, all week long, you can reach us at rosieonthehouse.com or email info@rosieonthehouse.com.